Well, I guess that's a problem. Every day on the news, it seems, we hear about more extreme weather events around the world, around our country. Of course, Hurricane Irene just the latest, and we're not even through with hurricane season. And who knows what kind of snowpocalypse blizzards we'll see this winter when, of course, Fox News will declare global warming a hoax that Al Gore is perpetrating. What we don't hear is a connection to climate change. A little bit here and there, you know, sneaking through, but not enough, unless maybe you're listening to the Weather Channel or listening to the Green Front radio program. And my favorite guest, my new partner in crime, or grime, if you count pollution as grime, CO2 part of it, would be D.R. Tucker. If you look in my inbox on any given morning, there's, 10 or 12 posts he sent me overnight. I don't know when he sleeps, but he keeps me up to date on all that's going on out there in the blogosphere and in media, more than I can keep up with. So I can't wait to get our website up, and you will get to share what I get to see, and that is just what's going on, why we can all tune in very easily, make it easy if you aggregate all the outrageous stories going on out there with politics, with Fox News, et cetera, all the garbage being spewed, contributing to the problem, then we'll all know that we can join together and in solidarity say this is a bunch of crap and we're not taking it anymore, or something to that effect. Welcome to the Green Front, DR.
Good afternoon. How are you doing?
Well, it's still morning here, but we are the World Wide Web, so it's afternoon and even evening in some places. Hope we have listeners everywhere. I want to quickly give out the phone number if anyone would like to join our conversation, since you and I speak a lot, certainly communicate a lot on email. We can open it up. The number to call the Progressive Radio Network, I believe, is the same number I call in to do the show, and that is 888-874-4888. I'm really good at getting great guests and covering very topical stories like the tar sands protests, where our friends Roger and Susan, I think, got arrested the last few days. I'm not so good at promoting my show. So tell your friends, tell everybody you know, that the Green Front does cover the issues of utmost importance to all of us, and that is what's going on with our environment, which happens to be our home, our only planet. And thanks for all that you do, DR. And tell me what has gotten your ire up, which maybe has raised your temperature a little bit this week, along with mine, as the outrageousness just continues to grow. I have to think that something's going to explode here, like the truth will come out of all this, because it's just getting more and more, well, outrageous is really the best word for it, in terms of what is being said by people who are running for the highest office in the land in regards to science, in regards to what's happening in particular with our climate, the impacts of which were being, you know, felt almost daily with things like hurricanes in Vermont, flooding, record flooding in Vermont, New York City, Manhattan planning, you know, for a hurricane. I suppose it's happened, but not very often. Do you think that should be getting people's attention?
Absolutely. And I first of all, I want to say that my heart goes out to all the people who were victims of the hurricane, both dead and living, especially in Vermont, which, I mean, the images that you see on the Boston Globe website, the photos from what has happened in Vermont are absolutely devastating. It looks like, in some cases, it looks like, the aftermath of a nuclear blast in terms of the
It looks
roads.
A little bit actually like Japan. It reminds me of the tsunami pictures, and it's not over. The flooding is continuing, and it's very serious. And yet CNN ran a Piers Morgan's show Monday night was, you know, is the media making too much of this? Is it a bunch of hype? Well, tell that to people who've lost their homes, their livelihoods, and God forbid, you know, someone's life.
Exactly. And I think the biggest outrage to emanate from this whole matter involving Hurricane Irene is that a few days before, Dr. Patrick Michaels, who happens to be one of the four climate change skeptics that you see cited on Fox News and in other media forums, wrote a piece for Forbes.com in which he predicted, and I quote, "It is doubtful that Irene will even cough up eight bodies, though power outages east of where the center makes landfall, probably on Long Island, may be extensive," unquote. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, I believe there's been at least 35 casualties as a result of Hurricane Irene, and as a Peter Sinclair, the great blogger at climatecrux.com, noted that apparently somebody at Forbes got a little nervous before the storm hit and tried to clean up the language so as to soften the tone of the piece so it didn't make it appear as though he was still saying that less than eight people would die, although there are other cached versions of the original article that show, in fact, that he does say that he doubts that even eight people will die as a result of Irene. And if I would like to say that if this guy is so flawed in terms of predicting casualties, why is he trusted for anything in terms of, especially in terms of his analysis of climate change? I mean, this is a guy who's always dragged out to basically say, yes, global warming's real, yes, people are contributing to it, but it's not that, it's not going to be that big of a problem. Well, let's see, he's 0 for 2 in terms of predictions. He's 0 for 2 in predicting that climate change will be a significant problem, and he's 0 for 2 in predicting the casualty rate from Hurricane Irene. So this guy, as far as I'm concerned, should be discredited forever.
It should be, and I've been saying that for years. He's been out there forever. Like you say, he's one of the four they always quote, and maybe one of the four in the world left who believe climate science is not something we really need to be too concerned about. But as obnoxious and ignorant as that comment is, I don't think he gets the stupid statement award. I think we have to give that to Michelle Bachmann once again for her noticing that there's something going on with our weather, even earthquakes in the nation's capital. I think someone might be trying to tell us something. She was looking heavenly, and you know, you'd think that that was in connection to all the extreme natural and perhaps not entirely natural events taking place, that that might have something to do with what we're doing to our climate and atmosphere. But no, she saw it as a sign to you know, cut back on federal spending. In particular, there's talk about cutting back on FEMA, the agency that's dealing with all these emergencies. Could it be any more ironic?
No, here's the thing.
Or maybe any more moronic.
Here's the thing about that statement. She said that God sent the hurricane and the earthquake as a message to cut federal spending. In order to deal with the damage caused by the hurricane, you will need federal spending. Although, of course, as you suggested, Eric Cantor is saying that, you know, he won't allow spending, you know, he won't allow FEMA spending or an increase in FEMA spending unless it's offset by cuts in some area that he doesn't like. So why would God send a hurricane to compel a cut in spending when it will require an increase in spending? Her statement
you
is every
would
bit
think
as
they would connect those dots, but no.
Her statement is every bit as illogical as her recent statement earlier this week that she would consider oil and natural gas drilling in the Everglades if it can be done without harming the environment. And this horrified, of all people, Congressman Alan West, who, you know, is hardly Mr. Environmentalist, but even he said that Bachmann committed a major faux pas, and he's going to speak to her about that, because I mean,
yet another faux pas.
It's one thing to be pushing, you know, drill, baby, drill, but really, if you drill in the Everglades, that's a kill, baby, kill, and I don't think anybody really wants that.
And she's the mother of what? She's raised like 20 kids or something through foster care?
Yes.
She should not want to be killing children.
It's amazing. She says that she will not vote to raise the debt ceiling, but she seems to be willing to raise the carbon ceiling.
Yes, you notice that too? All this talk about not raising the debt ceiling while the CO2 is pushing up against our, you know, atmospheric, you know, fragile atmospheric layer, causing this delicate balance that is our, you know, global ecosystem to be out of whack. There's every sign that exactly what climate scientists predicted is starting to happen now, mm-hmm. with extreme events, droughts, fires, floods, hurricanes, tornadoes. Even Roger Chamel last week said that the earthquake in D.C., and we had an earthquake not very big for us, but here in the Bay Area a couple of days after that there's a connection. He's apparently a geological scientist among mm-hmm. his many areas of expertise, and he said there most likely is a connection between the two coastal earthquakes as well as a connection to climate change. So mm-hmm. if you don't, you know, believe that carbon's a problem and you don't mind the hurricanes, tornadoes, and extreme destruction and damage happening everywhere from the weather changes, how do you feel about earthquakes?
Exactly. And speaking specifically of the hurricane, as I think I mentioned in one of my emails to you, that a libertarian friend of mine was upset that Bill McKibben has written a couple of pieces saying that climate change worsened the effects of Hurricane Irene. And as I told him, why don't you go up to Vermont and ask people if they think climate change didn't play a role in the broken roads and the isolated towns that they're dealing with? Go right, grab 10 people at random if you can, drive up to Vermont and ask them if they think climate change didn't play a role in this. See what kind of reaction you get.
and Bill McKibben, you know, who was among those arrested, as well as James Hansen, Daryl Hannah, the actress and activist, also arrested in D.C. Bill has really led, you know, of course, 350.org, but led this tar sands protest as well, and he's got another big global action event, Moving Planet, coming up September 24th. So no rest for the weary activists. We have more than enough to talk about and protest about, and we just, I guess, have to just keep the volume and the, you know, the activism up until, you know, we outweigh them or drown them out, because it's getting louder, it's getting more outrageous. Give us one or two more of your favorite stories from the week, and then we'll actually talk about one positive development.
Well it's you mentioned the XL tar sands matter. In terms of reviewing some of the controversies about that, before I get to the other stories, I do have a theory as to what's going on here in terms of that report from the State Department suggesting that it's not going to be any sort of real hazard. Mm-hmm. There's a part of me that wonders as to whether or not President Obama is going to officially approve the pipeline, with the mentality being that if Rick Perry is the Republican Party's nominee, environmentalists will be so horrified that they will support him, even though he's stabbed them in the back by allowing this pipeline to be created. It's sort of like the same thing that went on in 1996 when
Ralph Nader.
I was thinking in terms of when President Clinton upset progressives by signing welfare reform into law, but because Bob Dole, or as a friend of mine used to call him, Bob Dole, was the GOP nominee, progressives support him anyway. I do fear that that might be a political calculation going on in the White House. I had mentioned before that Keith Olbermann on his show Countdown essentially predicted that the White House will go ahead and approve it, and as a result listed the Obama administration as one of his worst people in the world. So I do fear that, you know, we could have this, as Jim Hansen calls it, game over for the climate for explicit political purposes. And if so, I think Obama, who honestly never struck me as a great environmentalist, will really, really damage his legacy if he allows that level of pollution to go through.
Mm. I agree, and one of the positive developments on the fossil fuel front is what happened in Alexandria, near the nation's capital. There's a coal-burning power plant there that's been very controversial, and was once considered one of the largest single sources of air pollution in the Washington area, besides all the hot air coming from politicians. That apparently is going to be closing by October of next year.
Yes.
And that is a surprise, a pleasant surprise. That culminates a 12-year battle to close that six-decade-old Potomac River plant, which, of course, activists have been blaming for causing all kinds of problems, contributing to asthma, lots of other serious lung ailments. And so we want to mention, you know, the positive news, because Lord knows there's enough things to get upset about. So need to dig a little bit deeper into this and find out how they actually had the will and the courage to do the right thing there. Probably somebody, you know, did something under the table. Maybe it's starting to happen, but it's worth mentioning.
Another thing worth mentioning is the you've mentioned before your conflicts with some of the folks at the Fox News Channel in terms of their sort of a dogmatic denialism. A few days ago, Bill Nye, the science guy, had a debate of sorts with Charles Payne of the Fox Business Channel. Beat the brains out of Charles Payne, as one might anticipate, but at the end, Payne indicated that he didn't understand what was being discussed, and it occurred to me, even prior to this, it occurred to me that I think I've mentioned before that there are only four dynamics that motivate conservatives to oppose climate science: scientific ignorance, support of or support from the fossil fuel interests, contempt for Al Gore, or sort of hardcore libertarian views. And there's a part of me that always thinks that, you know, the oil money and the support from the fossil fuel industry is the biggest factor of those four. But sometimes, but as of late, I have to ask myself now if it's just a matter of straight scientific ignorance. Is it simply a matter of people in the conservative media not having a strong command of science and simply gearing their programs to people in the audience who also don't have a strong command of science? Because I think we're at a point now where if people, if after, you know, Joplin, Missouri, after all these things that we've been seeing so far this year in terms of, you know, the billions and billions of dollars worth of damage, if you still believe that it's a hoax now, is it time to accept the fact that anybody who says it's a hoax is simply ignorant and just simply cannot be reasoned with by any standard?
DR, say this with me now. They're full of it and they know it. Together now. They're full of it and they know it.
Well, some of them might not be bright enough to know it. That's.
I think they have to, don't they? I mean,
This is something I've really been debating.
How do they get on national television? How are they getting their own shows? How are they getting paid millions of dollars?
Ignorant people have been on television since the time there's been television.
But this is not a fluke. This is a pattern. This is a, you know, consistent pattern of deceit. So I can't believe they're stupid. I almost would like to, but I don't think that's it. I think it's selective, you know, ignorance, and that's even worse. That's even more outrageous.
I think there are some people who know but can't ever acknowledge it because they're so dependent on the fossil fuel industry or staying within sort of the boundaries of the conservative media. For example, if you've read some of the stuff Charles Krauthammer's written over the years about his support for a what he calls a net zero gas tax, if you read between the lines of anything Charles Krauthammer has written, he knows climate change is real, and he knows human beings are contributing to it. He cannot ever acknowledge it, because if he does, he will be excommunicated from the conservative movement. But if you read, and I want to recommend in particular a piece he wrote in, I believe, the January 2009 Weekly Standard about why he supports a net zero gas tax. Read that closely, and you can tell he knows it's real. He just can't say it. So you have that element in the conservative media, but you also have another element that is straight up ignorant. Limbaugh and Hannity are both college dropouts. They do not know more than climate scientists, but they have no command of science at all. I don't think they're even bright enough to realize what they're peddling. On some level, it has to be a level of simply. This may be not a fight between red versus blue. This might be a fight simply between stupid versus smart.
It may be, and we should publicize the heck out of that, because how can stupid win the day and look at the consequences? And
mm-hmm.
You are someone, by the way, who stood up to your libertarian friends and your conservative Republican friends, and you did something perhaps those who are listening don't know, but you are a climate convert,
mm-hmm.
A real smart one, I would say, and you went out and wrote a column about what made you decide to change your mind. And you actually read a book, a couple of scientific reviews, and just review that quickly and tell me what's happened as you have spoken out about this more and more loudly and courageously among your, can I say, fellow Republicans, fellow conservatives. I don't know how you characterize yourself now, but that's why I especially love chatting with you, because you're not your usual tree hugger. You just stopped and looked at the facts and looked up and said, whoa, I was fooled.
Well, just to recap a bit, I used to be a climate denier, and I got the idea of climate change being a hoax from Limbaugh, basically. And I did a radio show a few years ago, and as part of, one of my guests was a gentleman from the Hoover Institution at Stanford named Morris Fiorina, who wrote a book entitled Disconnect, about political segregation in American life. And he noted that one fault line of segregation, political segregation, was environmentalism. And he noted that the Republican Party used to be the environmentalist party in this country right up until the 1980 election, where Reagan basically jettisoned any real claim to environmentalism in the GOP. And I was not aware of this lengthy history, and it started me wondering why the Republican Party had rejected it. And this was also around the time that the ClimateGate pseudo scandal took place. And I noticed that there seemed to be this sort of irrational exuberance among conservative pundits. People were running around saying, "Yes, yes, it's been proven that it's a hoax." And I thought to myself, "Wait a minute. If they're relying on a criminal act like hacking to prove their point, perhaps they don't really have a point. What if this climate change stuff is for real?" So I was lucky to have environmentalists in my social circle, one of whom recommended that I read the full IPCC report, and I read it. And I was just stunned by the level of information they had listed to make the case that climate change is real and that, you know, efforts must be taken to reduce carbon emissions. And I was absolutely stunned by that, and I did a lot of further reading, most notably the works of Chris Mooney, the brilliant author Chris Mooney, Republican War on Science, one of the best books I've ever read. And gradually came to the realization that, you know, the climate denial that I had once engaged in and that conservatives still engage in is a sign of the dumbing down of the conservative movement, and that there is no rational basis to reject the scientific findings indicating the role of greenhouse gas emissions in contributing to climate change. So that's what got me on my path to trying to wake up people who would prefer to remain asleep.
And I know you are doing that because, if nothing else, I have people who have told me that they were really, not that I have listeners who are climate deniers, but that your message is very powerful, and we want to get you out there even more than you already are. Thank you for all you're doing. We just have a couple minutes left. I want to close with a quick note that a friend of mine wrote to President Obama. I found this on the 350.org website in regards to the tar sands protest. Dave Finnegan is a teacher. He's a fellow climate project graduate. He and I and thousands of other Americans, volunteers, were trained by Al Gore in how to give his slideshow. He's passionate about telling children about climate change. I try to speak to adults who might not otherwise know about it through media, and he just wrote this. He said that he sent a letter. This is very brief here, so I'll read it, to President Obama, and he said, "Dear Mr. President, for the future, for Sasha and Malia and all their friends, please do not sign the Keystone XL pipeline agreement. Ask the girls and their pals at Sidwell Friends School about this problem before you act precipitously. Getting the oil out of the sand is as difficult as removing the cocoa powder from a batch of brownies. When that filthy oil is finally released into the atmosphere, it will raise the amount of CO2 in the atmosphere by 200 parts per million, and it will be game over for the climate, for all life in the oceans, and for your girl's future. Please do not kick this down the road. The next generation cannot solve it if we do not do our part now. Stand with the children. That can be your message when you refuse to sign."
And I would like to add, I would like to add to that, if Obama is serious about wanting the planet to heal and wanting the rise of the oceans to slow, he will veto this. He will not allow it to go through. He will be he will go down in history as an environmental hero if he stands up against this effort to basically pollute the planet and to reward a few rich oil men at the expense of the rest of the world.
Rich oil men who probably have kids and grandkids too. I always wonder about that.
No, they don't care about
money. Speaks louder than blood.
Yes.
And love.
Yes.
Love. Like, maybe they don't know from love. That's the problem, I guess. But till we can teach them love, we better stop them in their tracks, because this has gone far enough. I'm sure you agree.
We've got to turn it around, as your intro music says.
As the song says, yes. By the way, that theme song is my friend J.P. Taylor. Should have him on the show, but he's a school teacher. He can never come on during the times that we broadcast. But I love him. He's got a lot of other great themed songs, green theme songs, I should say. And he is also a passionate activist. So turn it around. That's what we're trying to do. Thank you, DR, for all you're doing. Thank you to the Progressive Radio Network, which has quite a few environmental shows on. Wasn't the case when I started covering the Green Beat 15 years ago, even 10, 5 years ago. I was kind of a lone voice in the wilderness, happy to have a lot of company. What we need to do, though, is get on mainstream media, where we have millions of listeners and viewers, get on television, too, and start talking sense to the American people, and then we would prevail, as Michael Kieschnick said, because the facts just simply are undeniable. But we just need to, you know, get on more than 5% of the talk radio airwaves. That does it for this edition of The Green Front. I'm your host, Betsy Rosenberg. See you next time. Have a great Green Week.